Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Between the Temples, Beetlejuice, and Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
I'd like to start out today talking about Between the Temples, which is a new movie, obviously, and it's a very nice movie. It's been getting good reviews from other people, and I will now add to the chorus. As I very often say about these movies that I review, it's not a great movie. I don't want to give that impression. It's just a nice movie. I think we can use all the nice movies we can get nowadays. So, Between the Temples is, as the title sort of suggests, it is about Jewish people. It is very much a Jewish comedy. It was directed and co-written by Nathan Silver, and it stars a couple of people who are very well qualified to be in this movie. One of them is Carol Kane, who plays the older female character, and she has been playing Jewish characters very, very well since the middle of the 1970s, when she kind of hit the world in a fairly big way in a movie called Hester Street. So it's been a long time for her, and she's still around. We don't see her as often as I think we should. She's a very, very good actor. And she plays one of the characters, and the other one is Jason Schwartzman. And we start off the movie with the Jason Schwartzman character, whose name is Ben Gottlieb, and he is a cantor at a synagogue, at a temple. And, of course, a cantor is somebody whose job is to sing, sing, sing. And that's what he does. Only he is going through a very, very bad patch of his life. And he really can't bring himself to do his job anymore. His wife died. He is full of depression. He is very upset. He has two mommies. And both of them are trying to set him up all the time with Jewish women. And he just sort of, in a way, wants to be left alone, in a way, wants to be saved from all his problems. But the bottom line is he is very, very unhappy with his life. And so near the beginning of the movie, he goes to a bar and he drinks a whole lot of mudslides, of all things. And of course, he gets very drunk. And then, of course, he gets into a fight and he gets punched. And now he is not only depressed and drunk, but he's sort of groggy from having been punched in the face. And he gets sort of saved by, yes, the Carol Kane character. There she is. She is in the bar as well. Interestingly, even though she is very much a Jewish woman, her name is Carla O'Connor because she was married to a Catholic. But her maiden name was Carla Kessler. And they remember each other. She remembers him first, and then he remembers her. She was his music teacher about 30 years ago. So there you have it. This is, in a way, to some extent, a May-December story. She is definitely a December. She's a whole lot older, and he is the younger man. He's not that young, but he's a whole lot younger than she is. And once she was his music teacher, and now they've had this semi-cute meet, and they are back in one another's acquaintance circle again. And, of course, the movie continues from there. They start to get closer, and what happens is it turns out that because she was married to a Catholic, and because of various other life circumstances, her parents actually were left-wingers. She calls herself at one point, she was sort of a red diaper baby, meaning, if people are not familiar with that phrase anymore, her parents were sort of left-leaning communist sympathizers, and therefore they were against all religion. So starting with that, and then the fact that she was married to a Gentile Christian, she never had a bat mitzvah, and she's always wished that she had one of those when she came of age. So now she would like to have it, even though she is now middle-aged and maybe a bit beyond that. So, okay, she says to Ben, will you do me a bat mitzvah? I'll study for it and it'll be just fine. And he says, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. We really can't do that. But she manages to persuade the rabbi who is in charge of the temple, and he agrees, yeah, that would be a good thing to do. So now Ben has got to give Carla her bat mitzvah, and she's got to study for a year because that's the way it's done. Well, as things happen along the course of the movie, suddenly that year timetable gets thrown out the window, and the whole thing has to be done in a really, really short schedule. I won't give away the reason for that. And that brings all kinds of complications into the whole thing. And also the relationship between Carla and Ben is itself a little bit complicated, partly by their age difference, partly by the fact that neither one of them is sure after a while whether this is a romance or not, what is going on here. Also, she has an adult son who is very much against this whole thing and very, very suspicious of Ben. So we have all of these complications. So as what I've said so far, I think, suggests, this is very much a character-driven movie. It's a plot-driven movie, yes, and it's a concept-driven movie, but the characters are really what carry it through. And the acting of the characters is crucially important to this kind of film, and it's very, very nicely done. I have to say, Jason Schwartzman, who of course is known among other things for a lot of Wes Anderson's movies, the trouble with me, that Wes Anderson movies generally have is there's just no spontaneity there. Everything seems overcomposed and overcooked and overfrozen, and Jason Schwartzman suffers from that. He doesn't get to show off his spontaneity. Here he gets to show off how spontaneous he can seem. Of course, it's a movie and everything has been captured on film, but he gives a nice, alive performances that I like better than I generally like his performances in Wes Anderson movies. Carol Kane is, again, she's been doing this kind of thing off and on for decades, and she's really, really good at it. She is quite wonderful. The secondary characters are also very well played. It's not a flashy movie, it's not a showy movie, but the cinematographer was Sean Price Williams, who is known mainly, I think, for his work for the Safdie brothers and their movies. Now, their movies are very different from Between the Temples. Their movies are very, very aggressively edgy and grainy and sort of always nervous energy. And this movie is a different kind of film than that. But Sean Price Williams does a very nice job of photographing this one too. And interestingly, he did it in 16 millimeter. It doesn't look like 16 millimeter. It looks like real regular movie style 35 millimeter. They probably did it that way for budget reasons, but it's a beautiful looking film in its own modest way. And it's a beautifully acted film in its own modest way. And it's a very, very nice movie about a kind of ethnicity that never goes out of its way to be too cute or self-conscious. It just kind of takes things as they come, and it has a few surprising twists along the way. So Between the Temples, I'll repeat what I said earlier, it is by no means a great movie, but it's just a really nice movie, and I had a nice time watching it. Recommended. And now for Beetlejuice. Yes, yes, there is a Beetlejuice sequel. And this is so interesting because just recently I talked with you all about the new sequel to the movie Twister. Twister came out in the 1990s, and now decades later, we have a sequel to it. Now, Beetlejuice, which came out in the late 1980s, now at long, long last, decades later, we have a sequel to Beetlejuice. One thing I want to point out, which is pretty obvious, is that the people making these sequels aren't being very clever about the titles. Twister, the original, becomes Twisters, the sequel. So now Beetlejuice, the original, becomes Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, the sequel. Okay. It seems to me to be not a very clever way of handling the question of sequel title. Then again, The Godfather Part II was not exactly the cleverest name for a sequel either. So, all right, maybe that's just a hard job, thinking up titles for sequels. Anyway, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice is the new one. And I'd like to talk for a moment about Beetlejuice because I looked at that again recently. That was a fairly early film from Tim Burton. And Tim Burton, of course, his style is basically being a live-action cartoonist. That doesn't fit every one of his movies, but that's the basic thing that he does. And I've always considered him an interesting filmmaker who never seems to quite live up to what I'm hoping for from him. I still think he's never made a better movie than his very first feature, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. That was partly due to the brilliance of Pee-wee Herman, who was the star and the main character. But that was really, really a good movie. Since then, I think Tim Burton movies, sometimes they're very, very refreshingly innovative creative and do things I never would have expected, but also sometimes they seem to be trying too hard and that sort of thing. Then again, for reasons of my own, I recently looked again at his movie of Sweeney Todd, a film which I hadn't thought was all that terrific the first time around, and I like it better now. So I thought, well, what would happen if I looked at the 1988 Beetlejuice again? Well, it's okay. Again, this is very, very much a live-action cartoon with all kinds of special effects along the way. One of the things that makes it fun to look at now is this was before the great golden age of computer-generated imagery, so we have a whole lot of practical effects, which means things were actually filmed in front of the camera as physical objects, and it's always sort of fun to see those. In other ways, I found the film, oh, let's just say very, very uneven. Again, the basic plot of Beetlejuice is that a young couple die. Yes, this is a comedy, but it's a dark one. And they find themselves as ghosts living in their own house. And then, of course, a living new family moves into the house. And then the ghost couple really want to get rid of the living new family because this is their house and they liked it and they're ghosts now and they think they have a right to stay there. But the living new family doesn't seem to get the message. They don't seem to have any success haunting the living new family. So they call upon Beetlejuice, played memorably by Michael Keaton, and he advertises himself as a bio-exorcist. In other words, where real exorcists get rid of ghosts, he gets rid of biological living beings. And that's where all the comedy of the movie comes from. One of the great joys of looking at the original Beetlejuice, and it's easy to find on streaming if you want to look at it again, is seeing Alec Baldwin, the young Alec Baldwin. My gosh, he really was a handsome leading man, and it's really nice to see him, and it's nice to see Gina Davis, who does a very, very nice job with her part, Jeffrey Jones in a secondary role, one of the finest actors of his day, and it was such a pleasure to see him again. Winona Ryder is good, so a good cast along the way, but of course, Michael Keaton dominates the movie as Beetlegoose. It's not a part for, you know, it's not Hamlet. And he sort of plays it as a swaggering, working-class kind of an exorcist. But he has a lot of fun with the role, and it's sort of fun to watch him. It's not the largest role in the movie, but it's the dominant role of the movie. So I had a somewhat good time looking again at the original Beetlejuice. And then, yep, I went off to my local theater and I saw the sequel, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. And here we have some of the same people back. Michael Keaton is very much back, and he dominates the movie. Winona Ryder is back. Catherine O'Hara, who I didn't mention, she was in the original. She's in the new one, too. And some new faces as well. Monica Bellucci, Danny DeVito is in this in a very small role, but it's always fun to see him. And Willem Dafoe, who has a very, not a gigantic role, but a very, very significant one. So that's definitely a new face to the Beetlejuice franchise, if it's really a franchise. So far, it's just a movie and a sequel. So the story this time around, once again, it has a whole lot of similarities. We now have three generations of that family. Their last name is Dietz, and they are all living now, coming back to that house out in the country, a very, very nice house. And yep, they still need Beetlejuice. And also we now have here a teenage girl. Her name is Astrid, and she's played by Jenna Ortega, very, very nice portrayal. And she sort of by accident opens up a portal to the afterlife, even though she is very much a living person. So we have that. The way you get into the afterlife is very similar in this movie. You sort of draw a door on a wall with chalk, and then you say some things and you go through it. So anyway, she does that. But there's another very important character in this movie who is a young man, and he is very interested in that teenage girl, and they sort of become a little bit of a couple, and he seems really, really nice. And then it turns out that he is actually a serial killer who is now in the afterlife, and he is a ghost, even though she is able to see him and interact with him. And he is using her as a pawn to get his life back and get back into the real world so he can continue being a serial killer. So, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, just like Beetlejuice, is a very, very, very dark comedy with all kinds of dark things in it about murder and this and that. There's all kinds of corpses in both movies who walk around in sort of the state they were in at the time when they died. And of course, it's all done for comedy and for humor. Tim Burton directed both of these movies. But yeah, okay, you got a whole lot of sort of mangled corpses walking around in this movie, just as in the original one. And again, you have a jokes about a serial killer here, and all kinds of jokes about what it's like to be a ghost and the problems and the thises and the thats. So I would say about Beetlejuice, very much what I said about Beetlejuice. It's silly. Oh, it's unbelievably silly in all kinds of ways. But there are lots of people who love the Tim Burton touch. I like it okay. I don't love it, but there are a lot of people who love it. And this is very, very, very much a Tim Burton movie. It's him at his most cartoonish, his most outlandish, and he has a good cast to work with. And now he does have the benefit of computer-generated effects as well as practical effects. So it all kind of comes out in this movie. So if you like silliness, if you like fantasy, if you like Tim Burton, then Beetlejuice is the movie for you. So that is my somewhat repetitive Beetlejuice story this week.
For which we thank you, as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Between the Temples, Beetlejuice, and Beetlejuice.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.